Today on One Question, what are the most underrated TV shows ever?
Out the door, just in time. Head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. In the car, the wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I'm...
Paul, people have questions. Well, one question. And we've got answers. Paul Testa, Tim D'Aloisio, welcome to One Question. Today's question is, what are the most underrated TV shows or series ever? Paul and I went through our memory bank of shows that we've watched over the years, and we pulled out some of the series that were some of our favorites that maybe didn't get the critical acclaim or the mass audience viewing, or were just forgotten behind some other behemoths that aired at the same time. And we're going to talk about those today. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
So, Paul, how did you... We talked about the question, what are the most underrated TV shows ever? How did you kind of tackle this thought?
Well, I mean, I think there are a ton of underrated dramas out there, right? But I kind of took the focus towards what makes me laugh. I like to laugh. And, you know, shows that may have been canceled or shows like you and I talk about shows all the time, but there are shows that we don't even talk about. So I don't know if you didn't really watch them. Or I don't talk about with anyone, but they kill me. Like, they make me laugh. So that's kind of where I based my list off of, is in regards to what's underrated and what I'm not talking about. We talk about The Office all the time. We talk about Seinfeld all the time. We talk about Friends all the time. But
well, so do 20 million other people, Paul.
That right.
would be why they're not underrated.
Right.
Or I mean, you get shows that are... massive audience or a large audience and everyone talks about, maybe they're not that good, right? That's mm-hmm. your overrated show, for those that are unsure what overrated and underrated mean. Thought yes. I'd go into big detail there. But no, so underrated shows, I took a similar approach in some ways. I did choose a few specific comedies, and then I also chose some dramas, and I noticed that almost all of my dramas that I chose were science fiction related, which I think speaks to my one of my preferences. But something that maybe doesn't get, you know, massive appeal because a lot of people just don't like science fiction as a genre. But I think you miss out on some really interesting storytelling in a serial drama and great characters that are, you know, in a science fiction show. And I'll give Game of Thrones as an example of one that crossed over, lost science fiction-y and elements, crossed over. And, you know, those characters have become a part of pop culture, where I think some of the shows maybe we'll talk about today didn't cross over, but maybe were even better dramas and more interesting concepts than... Game of Thrones or Lost. So you want to just dig right in, Paul?
Yeah, let's dig right in. Want me to go first? You?
Yeah, give me a comedy, Paul, and then I'll follow with one.
Well, my first one's AP Bio. I don't even know if you've watched this show, Tim.
I have not. I did a little research to look to see what people around the internet thought were shows that maybe didn't pick up, and I did see this title, and I said, huh, I have no idea what that is. I don't even know when it aired, Paul.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, I think it's two seasons, both seasons about 13 episodes, 12 or 13 episodes a season, canceled by NBC at the end of the last season two, but now picked up on Peacock, and on September 3rd is going to be coming back out as part of the Peacock channel, which I'm super excited about. The show is true laugh a minute, start to finish, great characters. The premise of it is there's a Harvard professor that got kicked out of Harvard and goes back to his hometown in Toledo and becomes the AP Bio teacher, but has no interest in teaching AP Bio and is just wants revenge on his nemesis from Harvard. That okay. And refuses to teach AP Bio to the kids. The kids are the most amazing, geeky kids that you could ever imagine. All great characters. It is 22 minutes, start to finish. Laugh, laugh, laugh. One laugh after another. It's got a, you know, each show has a decent story around it as well. It's not just slapstick. It's just you fall in love with the characters. No one was watching it, and I think
I'm looking here, and it looked like it had it started with maybe 3 million, you know, viewers for the pilot. It got a little boost for its second episode up to almost 6 million, but then it settled around 2 million right after that. So I don't know if NBC put a little push behind it to try and give it a boost after the pilot, or if it aired. What day did it air? What day of the week was it?
I believe it was a Thursday.
Oh, so it slotted in the NBC Thursday lineup.
Yeah.
So they gave it a chance.
I think it was a summertime show. It was not like a fall sweeps.
But by the second season, they were mostly under 2 million viewers per
episode. 2 billion? Well, that's...
2 million. 2 million, Paul. So, yeah, you could see why it couldn't hold its spot based on viewership, but...
Well, much like, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, these shows that have cult followings, though. When that show got canceled, like, it was canceled. It wasn't going to the Peacock. Like, there was so much outrage from the under 2 million... Or under a million or 2 million that you
under
said?
Under 2, yeah.
Under 2 million people. There was outrage on social media that pretty much forced NBC's hand to give that show, hey, maybe this will work on Peacock. We'll do it again and we'll stream it on Peacock. Maybe get users to Peacock, at least just shy of 2 million, to watch that show.
And I don't know the cast very well. Are there any well-known names that kind of headline it? Or is it, you know... Or people that are acting in other, you know, smaller shows that you know of? Or is it really an unknown cast?
It's essentially an unknown cast, at least it was for me. I mean, except for Patton Oswalt. Like, he's the principal in it. Wonderful character. Does a great job with it. And other than that, I mean, I was looking it up. Like, I don't even know the people's names. I apologize for that. But most of the, you know, these are junior seniors in AP Bio. They're like 35 years old, like in real life. Like late 20s to low to mid 30s is most of this cast. And they play teenagers. Unbelievable. Like it's hysterical.
Well, I'll tell you, Paul, my first comedy... underrated is also in education. The show Community, Paul, that also aired on Thursday nights at NBC from, you know, 2009 to 2014. It ran five seasons. At one point, it was packed in the Thursday night lineup at NBC with The Office, 30 Rock, Community, and what's the one I'm missing? Parks and Recreation. So it was in the 9:30 slot behind Parks and Recreation, and then eventually moved up to the 8 p.m. slot on Thursdays. Similarly, it had, you know, it started first season, 7.5 million viewers, and by the, you know, third, fourth, and fifth season, it had dwindled down to just about 3.5 to 4 million viewers per episode. And, you know, great cast. Joel McHale coming off The Soup on E!, it had Chevy Chase was kind of the big name, but had a kind of a bit part. Donald Glover, when he was just a writer on 30 Rock before he kind of blew up, and you know, just overall the cast, you know, was incredibly funny. The writing was excellent. It was produced or directed by the Russo brothers the first three seasons. They went on to leave Community to go do Marvel movies. I think they did the Captain America Marvel movies and right out of this. So had great direction, and it really stood out to me as a unique comedy that was the interplay between like these seven people that were at a community college, all from very different walks of life, and it's just pure hijinks and shenanigans the whole time. right? No one's really there for their education. They're just there to get their, you know, diplomas and get out. And it's, you know, satire of what a community college is like. And it just goes, and then it starts as maybe a little bit real, and then it just goes into sublime and ridiculous. Like one episode, one of my favorites, there's a full campus paintball war that breaks out. And it's filmed and shot as like a wartime documentary. And it's hilarious, hilarious sketch comedy. But I think it kind of self-imploded behind the scenes. I think there was a lot of, you know, I know Chevy Chase had a run-in with around the time he was on the show, and he was forced out for, you know, 10 episodes or so. And I think there was some other problems within the cast that, you know, and the production team that just kind of hampered its ability to stay on the air. But like you said, with AP Bio, it has a huge following for the people that love it. And I think that's what makes a show underrated, is when the people that love it so much, but other people have never even watched it before, right? Never gave it a chance.
Yeah, and I mean, I fall into that. I've seen bits and pieces of Community, but never really kind of sat down and took on the endeavor of watching that show. But, you know, hearing you talk about it, it's like, okay, well, maybe that is a show I should just go and really get into and enjoy, because there are these shows that just people miss. And sometimes, I don't know about you, but like people will say, oh, you gotta watch. Oh, you gotta watch. And sometimes it's just like you look and it, like, even if it's just Community, and you're like, oh, five seasons, man, do I really want to invest in this? Like it seems daunting. And hopefully maybe these conversations get you, you know, to look at these shows.
And I think with comedies, what's nice is you can dip your toe in and watch. And if you like it, you can bounce out 3-4 episodes, and then, you know, you don't need to go right back to it. Right. There's not that with a serial drama, you're always on the edge for what's happening next. Right. With a good sitcom, you can kind of come in, come out, and, you know, you don't have to blow through a full season back to back to back and invest into the next season right away. You can let it simmer for a bit and come back to it. So I think that's one thing that I do like about going back and revisiting sitcoms, is I do feel a lot less pressure to get, you know, to get through the storyline than with some dramas, where most of these dramas at some point were canceled for a reason, right? Maybe it's writing later on, or something's not, you know, doesn't quite, you know, fit. And so I'm rewatching Lost with my daughter now, and we're into season 5, and all the things that cause people to kind of start to fall off the wagon for Lost, they creep up and you lose the momentum, right? You're like, oh, do I really want to watch that next episode? Do I really, you know, like, where the first time you're like, you can't wait every night to watch that, you know, the next episode in the first couple seasons. So, right. But sitcoms, I think, give you the flexibility to experience new shows more frequently.
Definitely. My other one that I like, or really just rewatched again, and I had watched it when it was on air, I wouldn't say religiously, but, you know, I followed it along, but rewatching it start to finish is something that I've done recently, and that's King of Queens. Were you ever into King of Queens?
I have never watched King of Queens. And once again, let's see. So it aired from 1999, 9 seasons, to 2007. Mm-hmm. Which network was it on, Paul?
CBS.
So CBS, and what night do you remember what night it ran?
I believe it was Monday night.
Was it across from Monday Night Football? Or did was it before?
I think it led in. I believe it was like 8 was Everyone Loves Raymond, and 8:30 was King of Queens.
And then everyone would bounce off to ABC, yeah, from, or ESPN for Monday Night Football, depending on when. Interesting. No, you know what? It's one of those where, I mean, this was really Kevin James's coming out party, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is. He's a IPS driver, which, you know, is a rival to UPS. his wife, and there's old God, I can't even think of his name now. Arthur Spooner is
Jerry Stiller.
Jerry Stiller, a great George Costanza's dad from Seinfeld. His role is just hysterical. I mean, absolutely.
And how do you compare Arthur Spooner to George's father, Frank Costanza? Like, I mean, I know that seems like in the commercials that there's, you see a similar, like.
Oh, there's a very, they're very similar in the thing. Maybe not. He does have his angry moments, you know, that yell, like he always does, like a yell. But just the most ridiculous things. Like, I mean, things that just make you laugh. Like, you know, just to get him out of the house, they hire a dog walker for him. Like, so a dog walker comes by and walks him every day. Like, and I mean, just so many silly things. Basically, him and his wife yell at each other. There's a lot of yelling in this show, but it's well, funny yelling. He's obviously overweight. She makes a lot of fat jokes. it's just a fun show to watch.
Very good. And so generally you're looking at about 10 to 12 million viewers, but well, and that's a significant audience. And when you brought this show up, I said, is that really underrated? But when you think about the best comedies of that time period, because I mean, 99 to 2007, there's tons of great comedies. That's not one of the first ones that most comes to most people's mind. And if you, I'm guessing based on your reaction, would you put it up on par with some of the great NBC sitcoms at that time?
I mean, I wouldn't put it on par with like The Office or Seinfeld or Friends, but I would put it. I'm thinking like if you go back and you think, and I'm thinking CBS, like if you did like Big Bang Theory, which is a huge hit for CBS, like many, it went way too many seasons long, in my opinion, but the early seasons are just absolutely hysterical. Or you do Two and a Half Men with Charlie Sheen. It's definitely in that realm of what I would consider comedy, successful comedy.
It seems like kind of a throwback to. Like I don't know, I'll throw out like Who's the Boss and Family Ties, and, you know, like the, you know, even Home Improvement. There's a method to those types of kind of, you know, family, mostly filmed in the house, right? Like type of sitcom that, you know, NBC with some of its big shows kind of went away from, but. CBS, Everyone Loves Raymond, I think, was more similar to that, right? You know, mm-hmm. King of Queens. It seems like a little bit more of a throwback in some ways.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not a single camera comedy like that. Yeah. You see that NBC's kind of adopted, which really adopted around The Office, but and has produced many like that. But no, it's definitely it does have that feel. I mean, they don't have any children. In it, so I mean, it is an adult cast in adult situations. But overall, it's a fun show to just sit and. I mean, you can catch it every pretty much everywhere. Nick at Night.
I was going to say that's one that is all over the place on. Yeah.
It's not streaming anywhere, which is odd.
Not even on CBS. All Access.
Maybe CBS All Access. I'm sorry. It's probably that. It is, and it is now streaming on Peacock if you have the premium package.
That's interesting that NBC would have it, but on their service.
But it wasn't on Netflix, wasn't on Hulu, wasn't on anything like that. You can't even buy the seasons on Amazon or.
Oh, really?
So. Because it was weird. I was starting to want to watch it, and you and I had, you know, both gone cut the cord and went to YouTube TV. And there was a time there where you didn't have. We just recently got TV Land and Comedy Central and like Nick at Night, and all of that stuff. So I hadn't seen the show, and I was like, oh, I want to start watching this again. So I was looking to even just buy. I wasn't going to buy the DVDs because I don't own a DVD player anymore. But I was like, oh, I'll buy a season of it, and you can't get it anywhere.
Just reading a little bit about it. The one quote that was interesting to me was that the show has the undertones of the original 1950s TV production, The Honeymooners.
Absolutely.
Would 100%. You say that's kind of where its inspiration comes from?
Yeah, Pow Zoom to the Moon. I mean, they even actually have one episode where he is Ralph Cranston.
Well, there we go. Yeah. Which I think, you know, I think it's interesting. I think I would be more interested now to go back and watch shows that feel a little bit more throwbacky or inspired by kind of, you know, very traditional sitcom television than I would have when it aired. Which, because if you think about 99, 2007, you had so much new stuff happening on television. I mean, like, really, you know, great sitcoms, but also, like, a lot of drama. I mean, you could invest each night into TV shows that were on network TV, and you'd fill up your 8 until 11 o'clock. It's much different than now, where everything's, you know, scattered around, right? There's much less appointment viewing. That was really the time when you had your lineup and each night, and that's what you watched.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
we think we talked about that on the college episode, like on some of the things, like you had to do it. That's the only way you'd be able to do it. You couldn't trust the VCR. TiVo really wasn't around. Probably at that time, TiVo, you know, later on it was. But yeah, I mean, you were planning to, those old shows, I forget the days now, but like I can even go back, like as a kid, I think Monday was Family Ties.
That's a good question. I think so. Well, then there was Friday nights. Wasn't it Friday nights that was like Full House?
Friday nights for me.
Growing Pains.
Oh, that, yeah. And that was later on. Yep.
Yeah.
TGIF.
That's TGIF. ABC. Right.
TGIF. But like I even think as a kid, on Fridays it was Dukes of Hazzard, Dallas, and then Falcon Crest. Like,
there you go. Well, you know what? Here's one show that from that era that I almost put on our list, which is Quantum Leap, Paul. I mean, yeah. Quantum Leap.
Well, you've always been a big Quantum Leap fan.
Yeah, it just the whole premise at the time was fantastic. He's jumping through time, trying to get back to present time, and he keeps saving people and getting dumped in these different situations, and he can only hear his one guy, you know, like the one guy from the present, kind of guiding him around, and I don't know that there's so much. I think that show would still work if it were aired today. I think it, you know, sometimes some of those shows wouldn't, you just couldn't do it. Like you couldn't reinvent it. Like Hawaii 5-0 got reinvented, but totally differently. Right. You know?
Yeah. Don't even get me started on that. I mean, it's
you loved Hawaii 5-0.
I loved Hawaii 5-0. Every episode, never missed it. Just absolutely loved it. There was a bomb in Hawaii that Steve McGarrett saved the world from every Friday for many, many years. I think, I don't know if it was 10 or 9 or 10 seasons, but it ended and Paul got a little emotional. It was choked up.
I'll go in with another one that was another comedy, Paul, and it maybe started. It aired around the same time as King of Queens, from 2001 to 2009, 9 seasons on NBC and then ABC. And it started with about the same viewership, and then, you know, about season 4, all of a sudden it kind of fell off the cliff, and that's Scrubs, Paul.
Yes.
Which there's quite a renaissance. I don't know if it's because of the virus that's around, and like people think, you know, maybe a medical comedy, you know. I think actually, you know what, I do remember when, you know, COVID first kind of came out and people were trying to explain how a pandemic and how a virus spreads. There's that one shot from Scrubs where, you know, someone sneezes on their way in through the door, and then it shows the germs passing all the way through the hospital with that single camera pan as they go around. I think that got that little clip went viral. And then at the same time, Zach Braff and Donald Faison, the two stars, did their episode by episode podcast. Boom, you have a little binge watching Scrubs renaissance. But you forget that while it was highly acclaimed right out of the gate, it struggled to stay on the air, and you really had to rely on that core fandom to stay relevant while it was airing. I think very underappreciated at the time.
Yeah, I mean, it was. It got moved around a lot on NBC. It started on NBC, right?
Yeah, started on NBC through the first seven seasons, and then it took a year off. Well, in 2009, it moved to ABC after a little bit of a hiatus, and then finished up its last season, only getting an average viewers of 3.79 million compared
to... Well, what's the last season? Is it season 9 or season
8?
Season 9 was that was a bad season. Really, yeah, season 8 when that ends. Season 9 is when they go back to school or there's a whole different cast to it.
Yeah, I remember them trying to reinvigorate it, but it not working. They thought they could move the cast, keep the concept, and get another couple years out of it, and that did not work.
But it is a fantastic show, and you brought it to my attention again. Like, you should do this, and I rewatched. I mean, I think I did it.
You were doing 8 episodes a day, Paul.
Yeah, I was just banging out these episodes, and it's so funny. It's so there's heartwarming moments, there's crack up laughing moments, there's storyline. It is, and in listening to the podcast that Zach and Donald Faison do. You learn a lot about the show. Like, all the medical stuff in that show is 100% spot on. They had a medical doctor, as coaching them on what to do in certain situations. So it is not, it's almost like ER, but super funny. And the characters, you just kind of fall in love with.
It was really innovative for its time. I mean, like, when you it was very different than most sitcoms at the time. It definitely, the way it was shot, the soundtrack, the music that went behind it, the way, the physical comedy, I think, is very, very unique. Yeah, I just think I think it holds up now. I think that's what's really interesting to me about Scrubs is when you rewatch it now, it totally holds up. It doesn't feel, it feels dated in some technology, a little bit of technology, right? But those are things you can get over. The humor of it is just as relevant now as it was 10, 15 years ago.
Without a doubt. It was a gem to come across again this quarantine season. And not only did I rewatch every episode, I now, after one of Donald and Zach's podcasts, will rewatch the episode that they talked about again, just to get the little tidbits and see the things. Like, I do love these classic sitcoms or these gems that are now doing podcasts, kind of going over the shows, because it just makes me go back and watch those shows again and really appreciate them.
Well, and one that I know the Office ladies have theirs, right? But I've been listening to the oral history of The Office on Spotify with Brian Baumgartner, and it's phenomenal. I mean, the storytelling, what you learn about what the show went through to get where it was, and I don't know. I the behind the scenes of these, the retrospectives, is really interesting to dig into. So if anyone's looking for some other good podcasts, Oral History of the Office on Spotify and Fake Doctors, Real Friends, Fake Doctors, or Fake Doctors, Real Friends.
Real Doctors, Real Friends, one of them.
And that's on iHeartRadio, but can be found, I think, on pretty much any of your podcast apps. The Oral History of the Office is exclusive to Spotify every Tuesday right now. Great podcast. Paul, turning away from comedy for a second, I'll give you one that, one of my very favorite shows when it was on. And when I thought about it, I said, you know what? I'm going to go and rewatch it. I just rewatched the pilot this week. And I will keep the rewatch going because I just love the characters and the story is Fringe, which was on Fox. It feels a lot like The X-Files in some ways. And it's science fiction. It's Fringe science, right? So, you know, mind reading, telekinesis, teleportation, some alien type, maybe, you know, things. And I don't want to give away too much, but there's, you know, it gets pretty geeky in the science that goes behind it. But it's also, you know, it's not so far out there that, you know, it's based on some real Fringe science stuff. And the characters, a female agent, right, in the Fringe Science Division, Olivia Dunham, played by Anna Torv, who I don't know what else she's been in, but I think she was kind of... she was panned a little bit for her performance from critics of the show for being a little bit kind of standoffish and unemotional. But I think on the rewatch, it doesn't play to me that way. But the other person is Josh Jackson, better known as Pacey from Dawson's Creek. And he's phenomenal. And then his father is a brilliant scientist. Who you first meet in a mental institution, who is kind of called upon to solve the first case. And his name is Walter Bishop. It's played by John Noble, who you would definitely recognize if you saw, but I can't for the life of me think from where. He's one of those actors that you would definitely know if you saw him. And his character is just fantastic. It's, you know, like it just... If you think of the wacky, mentally unstable scientist that, you know, at the same time gets you to care about his emotional state, but is constantly doing crazy things, I think he's, you know, fantastic. And it weaves mystery that kind of goes through the whole, you know, the fabric of the show, but each standalone episode has its own story arc. Right, but kind of very much in the vein of, you know, the X-Files. I mean, that's definitely where the inspiration comes from. And I think it ran for 5 seasons, and it kind of bounced around a lot. But in general, you know, a lot of people look back on it more fondly and critically more positive than it was received at the time. So it's one of those that I think as people kind of reinvest into it, realize that it's kind of a hidden gem out there. And so I think there's just phenomenal mythology. So that's Fringe. I would recommend anyone that likes science fiction at all, you know, take a look. Very cool. If you like the X-Files, I would imagine you would love Fringe.
Has such a huge, X-Files has such a huge following and things like that. You know me, like, that is just, I mean, the one way to make me go to sleep is, you know, ask me to watch some science fiction. It has to be something special for me to kind of, like, Lost was kind of sci-fi, but it felt like it was real. Like,
that, well, so and that could, they blended I, it I, perfectly, I could, Paul.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And I agree. And a lot of the shows on, you know, dramas on my list are of underrated shows are science fiction. I think that's the exact reason. Speaking of Lost and science fiction, I'll just throw one other one out there that I remembered just looking up shows that, you know, were at different time periods that I totally forgot about was Flash Forward, which is on ABC at the same time where Lost was coming to its end. Both Fringe and Flash Forward, I believe, were J.J. Abrams' creations. Flash Forward, all of us, the first episode, the whole world goes unconscious, a global unconscious event for 137 seconds, Paul. And in that time, everyone has a vision of their lives 6 months into the future, and then they wake up back in the present. And so you only have this like minute and a half snippet of what your future's going to be like, who you were with, what you were doing. In then some people that didn't have a vision, maybe that means they weren't alive 6 months right. in the future, right? So now all of a sudden you have all this drama that's occurring as to why the event happened. What does it mean? But then you also had all these storylines about, well, this person was hooking up with someone that wasn't their husband or wife. Why was, you know, then they didn't know the person. Why did that happen? This person was standing on top of a building and that, you know, like, why would I be there? What, like, and then you think, do I try to lean into that moment and have it come to fruition if it was really positive? Or am I trying to shy away from that moment because it was something devastating that I don't want to happen? And, you know, so there's concurrent storylines, and you could see the inspiration from Lost, you know, kind of woven. It's like they said, how can we take this character drama where each character has their own arc and, but there's a wider mythology and apply it not on an island, but in real life and do some different things, elements with it. It was only two seasons. It didn't get picked up, but I thought that if it was, you know, it was great. Another one that similar time frame that I think had a similar fate was Jericho on CBS. Do you remember that show, Paul?
I remember ads for it. Never watched it.
Man, it was what, like the apocalypse came, and you know, like all of a sudden, all these little towns had to like figure out how to get supplies, and like the you know, there were new governments. It was very complex. It was very cool, but it you know one it was one another one where like the story. Didn't it got you going, and then it got canceled, and you didn't really get to see where the story was going to take you because they had
this
whole
world. And that's the worst
part. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that does suck when that happens.
And you know, it really I think it's interesting because a lot of shows you wonder if they're written season by season or if someone has they know what the end's going to look like when they start it. You know what I mean? And so,
well, yeah. I mean, I think it's different. For everyone, I mean, if you go and you think about How I Met Your Mother, which we're both huge fans of, they knew how that was going to end when they started writing the show. Where they may have had a hiccup is they didn't know when the show was going to end. Like they had no end. They were doing so well. So how do you keep the story going in the middle when you know you got to get to the end? So when they finally said, okay, after you know, I think it was the end of season 7, you're going to do 8 and 9. They could close that window of like what you learned. But no, I do think some shows, you know, go, I think this, all right, so let's go back to Lost, right?
Yeah.
Lost, like 3 episodes in, this was the message board days and, you know, everyone's up on a message board. People are like, they're in purgatory.
Right.
And so, and that was their vision when they started that show, but then they tried to derail everyone from thinking that over multiple seasons. And that's kind of maybe when the show went down a little, when they were really going away from it and like trying to get your mind off purgatory, and then ended up that they were
right back where you started. It's interesting. I mean, I wonder with these dramas, if it's better if you know your full arc and you can play within the boundaries to, you know, to tell the story over different lengths of time, or it's better to have a premise and build off of it, see what the audience is grasping onto and continue to build and craft and create along a general path. I don't know which one, you know, keeps shows alive longer. Like, I'll give you an example. I mean, not to go and to go again, Paul, but I know you haven't had a chance for a little while, but The Leftovers is probably, for me, the one that I would put, it was on HBO, number one on this list of most underrated shows, because I think not only did it not a lot of people know about it, but I think it's possibly one of the best written television shows ever. I think that it is incredibly smart, and how it changed, it's 3 seasons, how it changed from season 1 to season 2 to season 3 based on what kind of feedback from you know, that they needed to make those changes to keep it alive because it was on life support. And what they did with the story to keep it alive is incredible. And it's another one where, and it's Damon Lindelof, once again, one of the writers from Lost, coming right off of Lost. I think this was right after the Lost finale. This was his next big project. And the premise is that, a lot like Flash Forward, all of a sudden, there's a sudden departure globally of people. All of a sudden, like, I think a third of the world's population disappears in an instant. It's kind of like the rapture. You mentioned purgatory for Lost. This was kind of like the thought is always this was the rapture. Did it just happen where people, that believed in God called up to heaven and everyone else was left on earth to fend for themselves? And it's all about what the people back on earth, what they go through, right? But then in season one is very much grounded to that. And then season two and three kind of totally change direction and riffs on that story that you wouldn't even expect. And I think each one is successively better. So for anyone that starts that doesn't really love, season one is a little gritty and hard to, it's just uncomfortable. A lot of times the storyline, and it's a little painful to get through because it's not a feel good story. There's a lot of despair. But it's interesting and it's emotional. Season two takes all that stuff that makes it, a show that really hits you in your gut and in your core and adds a lot of twists, the entertaining twists to it, kind of, in some ways, lightens it up a little bit, but broadens the mythology. And then season three is just fantastic. It takes all that stuff and then adds on just an incredible, kind of culmination in storytelling. I think it helped that they knew it was going to be the last season, and so they could really tie a lot of loose ends together for a pretty complicated story. But that's one, three seasons, I would venture to guess, I don't have it in front of me, but that it was, 12 episodes a season. Is that generally an HBO run?
HBO's typically 10 to 12.
Oh, so I got it here now. 10, 10, 8. So okay. You're looking at 28 episodes. I would, highly recommend. It's one of the most, highly rated, shows on Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes, by fans, just rave reviews by the people that care about it. So I would highly recommend that.
Yeah. Again, Tim, with one of your shows just outside of Paul's genre.
I know, but this one's a lot more like
of all
Lost,
the ones you talk
it's about the characters.
See, Flash Forward seemed more like Lost to me.
Forward is, because it was ABC, feels much more like Lost.
Yeah.
This one...
But it seems like it's real human beings. They, like, I mean,
yes.
Not, like, and they're just, they're back in present time. Like, they're in real life. Like,
and The Leftovers is too. I'll tell you, what the thing that The Leftovers, the reason I think it succeeded where Flash Forward failed, not that they're there's similarities in the premise, is that the characters are awesome. The writing is incredible. I think if you look at, Damon Lindelof was a big part of what made you care about each of those characters and their plot lines and their stories within Lost. And you could see that writing come through. Where Flash Forward, you see a lot of what J.J. Abrams did as a director and a storyteller at a bigger scope comes through. But it didn't quite punch on the characters as much. And I think that's in what you said before. You really need those character pieces to make a science fiction show bridge the gap to non-science fiction, watchers. Mm-hmm. Which direction are we going to next, Paul?
We're gonna go to one that both you and I love. We watched right in the beginning and we're both in the midst of rewatching now. I don't know if you finished it. I have not. I think I'm on season one, episode 16.
I'm right around there, Paul.
Yeah. But it's sports night, and there's so many things I love about this show. One, Aaron Sorkin's first dip into the television market, coming off A Few Good Men and I believe The American President, as well. Was out before he did these, but if you like The West Wing, and you like any of, or if you like Aaron Sorkin in general, this is, I mean, it's just Aaron Sorkin, start to finish. The one thing I don't like on the rewatch that I'm noticing, and I mean, we've talked about this with you, is there's a laugh track, and that really doesn't work with Aaron Sorkin and his.
And that's
type
in
of,
season one. Did they pull it out at some point?
Yeah, I think he probably, like, again, this was Aaron Sorkin's first network show. So probably he didn't have the clout, or even though he was successful in what he had done prior, probably was just like, okay, well, the executives want a laugh track, whatever, I'm not going to argue this. My guess is he killed it in season two, and they probably still wanted a laugh track, and he said, well, I'm not going to do the show if we do a laugh track. Do you have the numbers on that show and like how it did?
Let's see. So it aired on Tuesday nights at 9:30 on ABC. And it did 10.5 million in the first season, 11.5 million in the second season. So it was watched. It was not, you know, like those are numbers at that time in 1998, 99 that you would have thought it would have continued to get picked up. And I'm not sure what the, you know, why it was only two seasons if it was, I know part of it was, you know, Robert Guillaume has a stroke, right? You know, right. It like, so that, you know, that he was a major character and they had to write that in. I don't know if Aaron Sorkin was starting to think about the West Wing and other projects, or if like
The West Wing had come out.
It was already out.
It had come out. The second season of that was the first season of The West Wing, I believe.
So I don't, you know, I wonder. It says Sports Night struggled to find an audience and ABC canceled it. And there were chances to move to different networks, but Sorkin decided to pass so that he could focus on The West Wing. So there was an opportunity to move to HBO, Showtime, or USA, and Sorkin said, no, I'm going to focus on The West Wing. I think that was a good decision for him, Paul.
That was a good decision, but there's so many similarities. Like if you are a fan of the first four seasons of The West Wing, which were done by Aaron Sorkin, if you are a fan of those and you never watch Sports Night, it's great to watch Sports Night and see the inspiration of what a lot of the stories were of The West Wing starting there.
Well, and I'll tell you, I mean, what jumps out at you right away is the pace and the speed of the dialogue. The delivery of the dialogue, even before you know the, like, you recognize the cadence, the walking around, following the actors as they're going around and talking. And I mean, it is 100% Sorkin. I mean, it's, no doubt. Like everything that made him successful jumps off the screen at you from the pilot. And then as the first season goes on, and I think it happens, you know, in the first 10 episodes, you start to really get to know and like, and I don't know if it's each character individually, but the group of them that are together that are making the show, it's just such a cool hang. You want to hang with these people.
Right.
And I think it's witty. It's interesting. It's also, you know, if you think about the time frame, this was when SportsCenter was at its peak. And so it's really playing off of something that was really relevant at the time. And I know with the amount of time that you and I spent watching SportsCenter, I think that only makes this show, you know, more special. So, anyone...
Well, I mean, it's basically off of Olbermann and Dan Patrick. Like, I mean, that's kind of where it goes. But I mean, it's just funny too, like if you are a fan of The West Wing, I'm watching a show, I was watching a show today, and it's like, oh my god, there's Donna Martin, like she's a character, you know, a small bit character, at least from what I remember now, that she had in one episode on Sports Night, who goes to have a very important role in The West Wing. And then obviously Joshua Malina, he plays Will Bailey in The West Wing. He's a star, or one of the, I would say, five key characters of this show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at the two anchors, the producer, assistant producer, he's an intern, and then the big boss. That's, you know, Robert Guillaume and Isaac Jaffe, managing editor of Sports Night. That's pretty much your main cast. And then there's maybe 15 production people or other kind of people that weave in the story pretty regularly. And then in the second season, or maybe late in the first, William H. Macy comes in as the ratings advisor, a great character. And I think it does a good job of telling sports stories. Like, the sports stories they include are interesting, right? You could see and so you've got that woven into the dialogue and the interpersonal drama between the characters. And it all works, and it's just...
And bringing issues, like issues that are still relevant today to
absolutely.
Light at that time. And it...
Well, they talk so racism, sexual assault in the workplace.
Me Too and Black Lives Matter are a part of this show in 1998, right?
And in like the first five episodes.
Right.
It's like they come... Or 10 episodes, you know, they come right out firing with things that, you know, I think at the time weren't necessarily comfortable. And the other thing that's interesting, if you think about it, is you've got Felicity Huffman, Dana Whitaker as the director of the show. You've got women in positions of power in the office.
Correct.
You've got, I think it is incredibly progressive for 1998 when you look at what else was out there in TV land.
Well, what I would consider like the Black Lives Matter, you know, it starts with a college football player refusing to play in a stadium because there's a Confederate flag outside of the stadium of the school, and fans wave the correct Confederate flag in there. That's a super relevant topic today. I mean, we're going through that now where Confederate statues are coming down. Again, people, this was 22 years ago. Aaron Sorkin was bringing these issues that were not necessarily as relevant then that are super relevant now. Like, and it just goes to his writing and his vision and things that were important to him. He could weave them in. And we say Aaron Sorkin and all that. This show is much, very much a comedy. Like, it's a comedrama.
A dramedy, Paul.
Dramedy.
A comedy drama? Is that a thing?
I don't know. So it's light but serious. And again, we're talking, you want to go to something, two seasons, two great seasons, full seasons too.
I mean, 23 episodes, 22 episodes the second season.
Yeah, so 45 episodes. But again, 22 minutes versus, you know, rewatching The West Wing, which I also started last night. Tim, I'm at the end of the rope when it comes. There's no movie, no new TV coming out. There's no new movies coming out. Like, I am back to rewatching The West Wing, which I usually pick up usually Thanksgiving. The holidays, for some reason, I feel like, oh, I'm going to start
you rewatching. You just get drawn right back in. Now, do you always go back right to the start, Paul, first episode?
I always go back to episode one, but then I'll bounce around to my favorite episodes.
Yeah.
But I always start at one.
Are there any, as I'm sure you did a little research coming into this as to what the general population thought was underrated. I know I did. Are there any that came up that you saw recurringly that you were never exposed to?
Schitt's Creek is, which is one that I haven't gotten.
Same with me.
I gotta do it. Like, I got to sit down and just watch. Sometimes it's just hitting that play button.
I've heard, Paul, that season one, and this is just totally anecdotally, that you got to get over the hump, right, a little bit.
Right.
There's something that, you know, there's something about it's better after the first bit. And so this is what I've been told, is don't shy away from it. We were talking beforehand, the one that kept coming up for me and one that is totally in my wheelhouse that I just never watched was Freaks and Geeks.
Right.
And, you know, I think many people say it was, you know, one of the best shows written of its time. And I just don't know that much about it. The cast is phenomenal. for just young comedic actors. So I look at the cast now and I think, well, of course that had to be successful.
Yeah, the cast is amazing. Not available to watch anywhere. Have to buy the DVDs.
All right. Got to go buy a DVD player, Paul.
Yeah.
I don't know. Look in the side of your all-in-one there. Does it have a slot for a DVD?
You know what? It might.
Hey, there you go. Look at that. But so Freaks and Geeks, I'm trying to think if there were any other ones that were on my list or that I saw that other people mentioned. The Mentalist, Person of Interest, Sherlock. There's kind of that.
Arrested Development came up on a bunch of lists, but I disagree with that now. I think that has caught a second wind.
Yeah.
Beyond where it's very
properly
rated.
With a
yeah.
Well, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is one that, you know,
that
another
was another
one
that came up.
And I just haven't watched it, but I know people think it, you know, it's hilarious.
So, and speaking of FX shows, like if people haven't watched The League is what I would consider an underrated show. Very funny, great writing. But I didn't see that come up as much on the things. But yeah, I mean, there are a ton of underrated shows, obviously. We just kind of really touched the surface of what hit home with us.
Yeah. Well, Paul, that's been another question asked and answered by us. Once again, if you have a question for us, if you want to react to today's episode, you can find us at One Question Pod on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for One Question Podcast. You can hit us on the Instagram, @1_question_podcast. Or, Paul, you can email us at onequestionpod@gmail.com. We look forward to your questions, and hopefully we'll have more answers. Until next time, that's been the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. But I can't do this all on my own. No, I know I'm no Superman. I'm no Superman. And you've got your love online. And you think you're doing fine. But you're just plugged into the wall. And that deck of tarot cards won't get you very far. There ain't no hand to break your fall. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta know just when to fold. But I can't do this all. Superman.